Greetings, Scotch and Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Mel Valentin, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, and we have Mel back online. He has been on a couple times. He was been on earlier this year. We did Chimpanzee, I think it was.
Did we really?
I think that was the one we did. You got the bum weekend, because we had Cabin in the Woods come out the week before, and you didn't get a chance to talk about that one.
Which I loved. I loved.
Yes. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. You know, it's such a well-done film.
Probably mine, too. Yes.
So it's the ultimate deconstruction of the horror genre, and it comes out on DVD next week, DVD and Blu-ray. So, you know, watch filmschoolrejects.com for a drinking game on that subject. But anyways, before we remind everybody who Mel is and where he comes from and what he does, you can go through the paperwork here. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and get our podcast and all of our shows. And we've got a new show, Oh Snap. You can check that one out. We just had our inaugural episode this week. It's pretty funny. We talk about an assortment of things, me and Meryl Barr. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to Fat Guys Network, Fat Guys of the Movies, subscribe to Oh Snap, subscribe to any of our shows, and you can get them delivered right to your portable device as you need. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and like our page. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. Have an interesting email that we'll mention. And then the voicemail, 740-205-6456, or you can reach me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Mel, remind everybody who you are and what you do and where they can find you and how they can stalk you and your mother's maiden name and your bank account number and all that good stuff.
I will skip the last two or three things that you just mentioned. You can reach me at, you can find my reviews. I've been writing reviews for, 6, 7, 8 years now. Yeah, I think it's closer to 8. So you can find my reviews at eFilmCritic, sfstation.com, nextprojection.com, and veryaware.com.
Wow.
And my Twitter handle is Theodore Fish. That's double F.
FYODORFISH, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I always ask you, I always want you to remind people what the heck that means.
Oh, what does it mean? Well, it just comes from a couple different sources. I mean, you know, when you have to come up with a username online, mm-hmm. I just had a couple books on my desk. One of them is, one was Crime and Punishment, mm-hmm. Fyodor Dostoevsky, and the other one was a collection of essays by a literary writer, theorist, Stanley Fish.
Wow. See, that's way too esoteric.
Well, again, I just looked at my bookshelf. I'm like, oh, okay.
Hey, well, how about that? Yeah.
Double
so, Yeah, for me, it's like, well, fortunately, my name, Kevin Carr, I signed up for Twitter years ago before anyone was really even tweeting. I think Neil Miller from Film School Rejects said, you should try this. So I signed up for an account and never used it. And I didn't start using it until 2009 when I'm like, well, might as well do something with this. And that was my... that is what ended up being my name. So I didn't have to come up with something weird or bizarre. I didn't. Of course, mine wouldn't have been anything like, oh, Fyodor Dostoevsky. It would be like, underpants toot. Ha ha.
Well, I actually signed on, I think, in 07 because a friend suggested, but I didn't use it. And at that time, it always seemed to make sense to use a different username than your real name.
Yeah, because you had to be scrappy and cool.
Right. But then when I did try to switch it, there's been someone who has my name and has been squatting it for years, and they've never tweeted. How about that?
So you should send in like your birth certificate and demand it.
I contacted Twitter multiple times, never heard back from them.
Actually, what you should do is you should trademark your name, and then you can demand it.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah, that's the chagrin of using Twitter. Yes. But anyways, yeah, mine. I got the very boring, very basic Kevin Carr, and a lot of people. Yeah, people. I kind of got that from people saying, "Oh, well, it's not a cool name." And I'm like, "Yeah, but you know who I am." You know, like even like Kevin Smith, the real famous name like Kevin Smith, which is a common name. So he had to go with that Kevin Smith. And I know a lot of people who use the or that, like fake Rob Hunter, who writes for Film School Rejects, he goes by Fake Rob Hunter.
Right, because there's probably another one. Right?
Yes.
Or you could use a Mr. I've noticed that. People put in a Mr. Or Ms. differentiate themselves. And still not extend their name too long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't use actually Fat Guys at the Movies. It's too long for a Twitter name.
Yeah. You wouldn't have time to tweet anything else. Yeah. Or actually, yeah. They probably do have a limit on character.
They do. No, yeah, it's too long. Yeah. We actually tried to get that. So, speaking of nothing, let's just move on, since we're speaking of animals, Twitter's, or animals, Twitter.
And fishes. And we're talking
I'm
about
just
fishes.
Trying. I'm just stretching too long. Anyways, let's talk about the first movie that's coming out wide this week. It's Finding Nemo 3D, in which Pixar re-renders their blockbuster about a fish trying to find his son, now in 3D.
My son was taken away from me.
Your son Chico?
Nemo.
Right, got it.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me.
Now, this is, I believe, aside from the Toy Story films, I think this is the first. This is the first Pixar movie that's been re-rendered in 3D. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we're going to see Monsters.
Monsters Inc. is coming up.
Right, but that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they'll re-release other things. Like I think The Incredibles would probably be pretty cool in 3D. But they didn't strike a 3D print. They didn't do a conversion. They went and they re-rendered it, and they did it nice and higher resolution and that sort of thing. Is that correct? I mean, did it look good?
It looked good. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And the Toy Story ones also looked really good. I was actually shocked and surprised at how good they looked. Obviously, you still have the base level animation and how unsophisticated it was relative to what came after. But still, you had textures and you have depth in the Toy Story re-releases, and in Finding Nemo. I think Finding Nemo, too, was sort of that, and Monsters, Inc., to a slightly lesser extent, was when the visuals got incredibly strong and much more detailed. You know, all the underwater stuff just looks unbelievably fat, you know, terrific.
Well, I know they used a lot of specs and texture and within the water in the initial release.
Right.
I imagine that looks probably even... That might be the most fascinating part of it. I haven't seen it in 3D. I kind of want to.
Oh, you
for
have
that
to,
reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is sort of looking like looking through a window. And they do more of the depth stuff, obviously, since it wasn't rendered originally. So you don't have all the gimmicky stuff jumping out at the camera or being thrown at the camera.
Yeah. Well, in fact, if you watch the behind the scenes, the commentary of the original movie when it came out on DVD like 10 years ago, they were saying they actually up to that point and a little bit beyond it, a little bit of exception with Monsters, Inc., they said they've tried to not go crazy. They didn't try and do they called it the David Fincher sequence where they're planting the break out of the
fish
aquarium.
Tank? Yeah.
Yeah, and they said they specifically did that as very obnoxiously with the, you know, virtual camera. He said, but everything else, the camera literally could be there. They use that. They said, let's not just put it in bizarre places. And they've kind of gotten away from that now, which is okay. But I think that's kind of what held Pixar to a higher standard, as they said, well, let's still shoot it like it was a real movie. So,
oh, that's the first time I've heard that, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So what do you say? You got about 15 seconds. Are you going to give it the fat guys kind of rocks, kind of sucks, or rocks or sucks? Where does it fall on that spectrum?
Oh, it rocks. It rocked in 2003. It still rocks. It's a really great story, and it still looks terrific.
Okay, cool. When we get back, we got to go to a break. When we get back, I got a little tidbit on Finding Nemo, and then we'll talk Resident Evil. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We were just talking about Finding Nemo 3D, and what's interesting, I have an interesting history with Finding Nemo, so to speak. Now, I'm a huge Disney fan. I'm a huge Pixar fan. I love both divisions of that company, which originally, when they did Finding Nemo, were technically separate companies, and it was just a distribution deal.
Correct, yes.
But I love both of them, you know, even though people will accuse Disney of being this overpowering corporation, but you know what, overall they there's a lot of good products that come out of it. Now I love Pixar, I love the Toy Stories, I loved Bug's Life. What's interesting though is when Finding Nemo came out. Finding Nemo is not my favorite Pixar movie by a long shot. Now I wasn't a big fan of the first Cars, so that actually ranks lower. I was not terribly impressed with Finding Nemo when I saw it 10 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, and in fact, I gave it a 2.5 out of 5 stars, which wasn't a... I mean, that's... there's a lot worse. That's not the worst review you can do. But I was kind of, I wasn't that impressed. I thought it went on too long. I thought it was, I just wasn't a big fan of it. And so I wrote my review and I posted it, and it ended up being linked on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like one of the few negative reviews, because it's 2.5 out of 5. So it actually gets ranked as a rotten. And it's one of the few. So, and I'd written it, I think I originally wrote it for Film Threat. And I talked to the guy, it was one of the guys from Film Threat. Now it's changed hands and everything. And he even said to me, he's like, oh yeah, we still get people bitching about your review. and how much you hate it. And I think it's funny. So I've grown to like it because I got the DVD to review. And at the time, my son was like 2 or 3 years old. And he watched it, as any kid does, any Disney movie, watched it incessantly and just kept going and going and going. It has a rewatchability value that's incredibly high, more so than most kids' movies. Because most kids' movies, it wears on you after you see it a dozen or so times.
Wow.
Yeah, well, or more. The Lion King, I get irritated with after a while. There's parts I love about it, but I've also not been a huge fan of The Lion King.
I was never a fan of The Lion King, sorry.
But Finding Nemo, it grew on me a lot. And then when I went and started watching the DVD, I gave that DVD, and it was a fantastic DVD, by the way. It was very functional in that. Of course, you can do more with Blu-ray now, but it was extremely functional back then. It had some fantastic special features, and I really grew to enjoy the movie, and I really grew to appreciate it. And I had other friends who had kids, and you know, we kind of had this bonding moment. So I've really warmed up to Finding Nemo. Still not my favorite. And every now and then I get people picking on me for my bad review. And I got an email last week from a producer at Global News in Canada. Because I looked up his name and his address, and he's for a big news organization in Canada. I guess he was doing, researching it. And his email goes, Tim, and I'm not going to say his last name, but he goes, his email says, he goes, his subject was yikes. And the email was, must be pretty embarrassing to have your Finding Nemo review dredged up again on Rotten Tomatoes and seeing that you're one of 3 reviewers to pan it. Okay, first of all, I didn't pan it. I gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars. That's average, mediocre, right. It's
right.
A middling review. Okay. For the record, I gave Cars, the original Cars, 3 stars out of 5. So it's right around that, Anyways, my response to him, I go, so nope, not embarrassing at all. One should never be ashamed of any review. To do so would defeat the purpose, but thanks for reading. Because my point is that that is a snapshot of my thoughts on the movie.
At the time, right.
At the time, in 2003. So there's nothing wrong with, I like a lot of crap. And I like, and I hate a lot of movies that other people, that the majority disagree with me on. So I found that interesting that people I get that, and I also gave Sunset Boulevard a bad review. I was not a big fan of Sunset Boulevard.
I'm speechless. I'm speechless on that one.
And I get people giving me crap all the time for those two. Those are the two that I get most. And then the one after it, I liked G-Force.
Oh my God.
Which was a terrible movie, but I saw it with my kids, and it was fun.
It's a kids' movie, yes.
And for what it was. I mean, I the part of the reason I like G-Force is I'm like, it wasn't trying to be anything more.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, yeah. But I have to ask, have you seen the Oogly Loveys or whatever?
No, I did not go see the Oogly Loves. I thought about it. I almost did, but I just didn't have time. And I have a 4-year-old. I would have taken him to go see it. And I even said this, I said this to Elizabeth Rapp last week. I said, when I found out how poorly it did, I was like, God, now I kind of like wish I had seen it to be one of those $206 worth of intake any given theater had. But you know what? I saw Delgo in its initial release on the weekend. I took my two sons at the time, and I didn't feel special about seeing that one. And that one made, I think, $237 million. $237 per screen over the entire weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was like $43 a day or something like that.
Yeah, I heard it actually broke the record for the biggest drop-off from weekend to weekend.
Yeah. Well, it probably did that, but it also, it broke Delgo's record for the lowest per theater gross
right.
of a movie being released in over 2,000 theaters.
Yes.
I think, or something like that.
That's just awful.
It was just terrible. But, I mean, if it was it was a grand experiment that failed.
So. Well, I love the spin that the guy who created it, the mastermind marketer, put on it.
Yeah.
People will want to watch it now that they know that it was a bomb.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, I was like, when are the hipsters going to be like, I love Oogie Loves in an ironic way?
If you have a lot of alcohol or other medicinals handy, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
I'm
what
sure
happened
if
with
you
the
drop
Teletubbies.
Acid.
Teletubbies for a while had sort of a pre-hipster following, I think.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was sort of, hey, we've been out all night and drinking and doing other things and
well, they
sort
there's
of the perfect
plenty of
show to put on at 8 in the morning.
Well, but there's a lot of children's programming now that actually caters to, it's for kids, but it skews a little older. It's like a wink and the nod to the older audience. I mean, stuff like Adventure Time, a lot of people like. And
Adventure
Phineas
Time,
and,
definitely, yes.
Yeah, Phineas and Ferb is very funny. And even like the Backyardigans, I don't know if you know who they are. They're these little computer-generated animals that live in a – they have backyards and they have imaginary adventures, which is kind of the same – it's the same old stuff that every kid's show does. But that one has a lot of college students would watch that back in the 2000s, in the early 2000s, mid 2000s. So, but yeah, I Oogie Loves I did not go see, and I like I said since I've grown fond of Finding Nemo. I do think it runs too long, but it's incredibly violent at the beginning.
My problem with Finding Nemo initially was just, again, not having any kids, but sort of trying to project what I would want kids. And of course, I saw anything and everything I wanted to when I was young. So I'm being completely hypocritical that that opening was just so stark and so dark.
Yeah.
You know, and you really understand and sympathize with the father character.
Yeah.
Why he's so incredibly overprotective. Of course, that's sort of the story is why he has his own adventure and loosens up and Nemo has his own adventures, et cetera. And, you know, they sort of come to a mutual understanding and, you know, that's the big life lesson that it imparts. But still, and there's some incredibly intense, scary scenes in the film.
Well, and the thing is, that's actually one of my problems with it from the beginning as a kid's film. And seeing it when I had little kids, the beginning is a horrifying beginning.
Yes,
it is shooting Bambi's mother in the face on screen practically. In the first scene, they don't wait until they're halfway through the movie to do this. They open it with that,
right?
And there is that school of thought. There is a lot. The film critics do get like that, and they're like, "Oh, well, it was so daring." I'm like, "It's for children, you know." And that's great that you want to have. And I run into the same problem when people talk about Batman, and they're like, "Oh, it's so great that Batman's dark and mean and blah blah blah." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, but you know what? Batman's also fun and for kids too. So you can't have everything." And so I always rejected that push to make every superhero dark and brooding because I'm like, there's still comic books, there's still cartoons on TV for kids to watch. So
well, I partly agree with you in that I love the Dark Knight as the Dark Knight,
yeah.
Frank Miller Dark Knight and the Nolan Dark Knights. But I also, because of childhood and watching the Adam West Batman's, you know, syndication, I love those too. Part of me does, you know. I mean, they were perfect for a certain age and temperament, and they also had a camp value. They really played it up, and that was that whole period too, where comic books were really meant for kids, and that was the silver age. And so the Adam West Batman's really reflected what the comic books were at that time, in the same sense that the Nolan Batman reflects the comic books as they've existed over the last 15, 20 years. That darker Batman.
Well, they've grown up. They've got an older audience.
Exactly.
Kids aren't reading because kids don't have $5 to spend on a comic book. That's why I like the Avengers is that it's still okay to have lighthearted characters.
Yes.
But we got to move on. We're going to go out with the trailer for Resident Evil Retread, whatever the heck it's called. More zombies, more guns, more 3D. In 3D.
My name is Alice.
We have you under our control.
They used me to perfect the virus. Everyone I've ever known. Everything I've ever done has been used against me. Now they can manipulate the world.
We've taken over New York, Moscow, Tokyo. This is humanity's last stand. The beginning of the end. Good luck. You'll need it.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the infamous middle segment with Mel Valentin. We left on the trailer for Resident Evil Retribution, I think. It's
number 10, 11, 12, I don't remember.
These are like the Underworld movies where I actually reviewed the latest Underworld movie, whatever it was, and I got the name wrong. And I think I did the same thing with Resident Evil the last time the Resident Evil movie came out, because I just said the wrong name. Because they don't mean anything. These subtitle names, it's just like Resident Evil again. You know, it's not even like, you know, it's sort of like, even Leprechaun 5 in the hood made more sense.
At least that's giving you a location, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A place, a setting.
You're like, well, which Leprechaun movie? That's the one in the hood, as opposed to the one in space.
Because there is one in space, which is great.
There is one in space. Yeah, so here's the thing. They didn't screen it for critics. They didn't screen the last ones for critics. I don't expect them to. They screened, like, the one where they're in Las Vegas? I think it was number two, right? Well, they screened 2 and 3, I think, for critics. And then 4, they didn't screen. And then this one's the 5th one, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
And part of the thing is, and Mel and I had a conversation off the air about the fact that neither of us are really huge zombie fans. And no offense to, you know, my horror fans out there that are zombie fans. I just think there's only so much you can do with a zombie movie.
And I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah.
And the same thing, you know, and honestly, with a lot of these classic monsters, vampires, there's nothing more you can do with vampires. So it's not exclusive to zombies, but there's nothing more you can do with vampires. You've done the Dracula vampires, you know, the very classical vampires. You've done the Anne Rice, mopey, I'm going to live forever, oh dear, kind of vampire there. And now you've done the Twilight, the teen vampire movie. There's nothing more to mine from some of these very classic monsters. Unless you can frame it in a certain way. And while I find the Resident Evil movies mildly entertaining, they are just, in a sense, they're just action movies with zombies. They're zombie movies with guns. That's about all I can say.
That is probably true. Well, I mean, they do sort of come up with a lot of different variations on the zombies and zombie monsters and dogs and hybrid animals and
The creature design. The creature design's cool.
They're passable. I mean, they're always CG, or for the most part, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, but you know what? That seems to be the go-to position, and I think crappy CG is crappy CG, but crappy stop motion was crappy stop motion, and crappy prosthetics was crappy prosthetics, and crappy creature design latex was crappy creature design latex. So all true,
but there was also the possibility in each one of them at their best to be really impressive, and those are the ones we sort of think of and
Leprechaun
celebrate, like American Werewolf in London, for example.
Leprechaun in the Hood had crappy prosthetics.
Isn't that Warwick Davis, who was also in every other movie? I mean, he was sort of the go-to actor, right?
Well, he was the Leprechaun. He was in all the Leprechauns, I think.
No, but in wasn't Warwick Davis also in?
Well, he's in Willow, and he played
Willow, right? He's the hero in Willow.
Yeah, he played Willow, and he also played Wicket in Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is actually Wicket's full name. It shows what a Star Wars nerd I am. Wicket's full name as an Ewok was Wicket W. Warwick, and it was named after Warwick Davis, who played. And he was also in the Harry Potter movies. He played multiple roles. He plays one of the professors, and he plays one of the goblins who Gringotts, the bank.
Correct. Yeah, the bank of
the little goblins that aren't Jewish, but they totally look like the stereotypical Jewish goblins. The most racist characters.
Well,
they're like, oh, okay, let's make these miserly guys with big noses and huge ears.
And they control all the money and the wizard.
And they're all greed. They don't care about anything but greed. And they will slit your throats to get their gold sword back. And I'm just like, And then you watch that and you go, oh my God, did like Adolf Hitler write this? they resurrected Adolf Hitler and his cronies to do the creature design for the Gringot goblins. So, which is of course played by Warwick.
All of them were played by Warwick Davis.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Oompa Loompas.
Right. One actor, play them all.
So, yeah, but, so yeah, I mean, I it's like people, when they go, oh, it's CG, I'm like, well, no, CG's not bad. I've seen really good CG and some really good CG creatures.
Yeah. Clash of the Titans, Wrath of the Titans, I thought really stepped it up.
Yeah.
Standing aside the story and whatever else you want to say about it, which is not much.
The movie's not that good, but you're right. The creature design is, I've seen.
And the integration of the practical and the.
Mm. Well,
practical sets and you know, live action and the CG was actually really well done.
Well, and it's so funny because a lot of people when the prequel to The Thing came out last year, what'd you say?
The premake,
yeah.
I was really trying to get that to work and have people pick it up and use it, but unfortunately, no one really did.
You didn't meme yourself. Aww.
No, I know. It's a prequel and it's a remake, all in one. Remake.
What's funny is people are like, oh, that's too much CG. And there was.
There was.
But if you watch the special features on the Blu-ray or the DVD, you'd actually be surprised at how much was practical. There was a lot of practical effects that was then just kind of augmented with CG, and they just overdid it with the CG. But there's a lot of stuff that I thought were CG elements that weren't. They just had the edges around them CG. And but there are certain parts that looked good, you know. So CG, because I've gone back and I've watched. We watched The Gate. We live tweeted The Gate a while back, and I love The Gate. Fun movie, but the creatures were awful. They looked really silly.
It's a fairly low budget film too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Little Steven Dwarf, who never really actually grew up, but
yeah, well, he looks weird now. He's done his own movies. But, you know, the thing is, so anyways, the Resident Evil, you're right, they have interesting creature design, but we're going to try to escape these zombies, and then we get in a stronghold, and then the zombies come in, and we're going to go find more people, and then when we get there, they're taken over by zombies.
And they fight umbrellas of some kind, right?
Yeah.
There's some umbrella fighting? I'm not quite sure.
There's an umbrella.
I swear, I saw the first three and half of the fourth one, and I can't even tell you what the story is anymore.
Yeah. They've gotten so overblown because the first one was your typical haunted house movie, and the creatures coming after them happened to be zombies. They were stuck underground with zombies, basically.
Yeah, I thought it was fairly clever, and it had some good moments. It had some very good segments.
It was decent.
Individual set pieces I thought were pretty solid.
Yeah, and I actually liked the second one to a degree because it then said, okay, we're going to go outside of, you know, the rest. They were going to go outside of the Umbrella Corporation, and we're going to go to Raccoon City, and now that place is overrun. And then they like go to Vegas, and they're like, everybody's taken over. And then like the next three movies are like, everybody's taken over. It's going to the world. And then you get to the next one, and they're like, guess what? It's the world. And now this one is like, it's the world. I'm like, it was the world like three movies ago.
Right. Well, she's still fighting the same villain who's been played by five or six different actors.
Yeah. But they do remind me of, they remind me of the Underworld movies because it's basically the same shitty movie
over and over again.
Just over and over, and then they have to go after it, and they each have that badass female character in leather, and you know, so there's these, and it's all done by a director who's banging the lead actor.
Oh my God! Yes, you're right.
Yeah, and the thing is,
they were married too. They actually both got married.
Did they? Okay.
Len Wiseman married Kate Beckinsale. They've been married since then. And Paul W. S. Anderson has been married to Mila for quite a while.
And the thing is, which with each of these movies, I become less of a Paul W. S. Anderson fan. I like Paul W. S. Anderson.
You'd be less of a fan. I don't.
Well, no, but see, I love Event Horizon. I think Event Horizon is a fantastic movie. And
I can't say it's a fantastic movie, but it has its moments. It has its moments. It's a movie of where the story is secondary to the spectacle, but that's fine. And I love the set design. I love the practical miniature effects, which are fantastic.
As a horror fan, I really love that. And I also...
Don't you love... Hell is unimaginable. And then they show shots of hell.
That's unimaginable hell. No, they show just part... They show what happens when you get to hell, but there's more to it.
Yes.
So... But I really love... I dearly love Event Horizon. And even something like Alien vs. Predator, which I just recently rewatched. I unabashedly love Alien vs. Predator.
You should be bashedly in love with it.
There's no bashing going on. No, I really like it. I think it was what it was, and I think it got unfairly maligned until the second one came out, and then people have made
No, it was fairly maligned.
No, I like Alien vs. Predator.
Its ideas weren't necessarily that bad, but
there were some issues with. I mean, the life cycle of the aliens went down to minutes, but
all of a sudden, yes, it didn't take as much, and there were some similarities between Alien vs. Predator and Prometheus that some people pointed out. Yeah. Some of the story elements, which
I thought it was the reason I liked Alien vs. Predator is because Alien was fantastic. Aliens was fantastic because it went in a totally different direction. It made a very different movie with a very similar concept. And then I thought Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection were shit. Although Alien
Resurrection, how dare you?
Yes. Oh, they were both terrible. Oh, agree, Alien 3 is terrible. Alien Resurrection, I actually have warmed up to a little bit because of its just batshit crazy level of just stupidity.
It's a goofy movie. I think partly the French director and his sensibility and his approach to the
if you look at his
characters and
his films are weird anyways.
Right. There's the horror elements. He just kind of downplays them or makes them really silly. And
yeah.
So it's like he says, "Oh, there's no way the horror genre is beneath me, so I won't go there with this film."
Yeah, it's like a cartoon. It really is. It's so bizarre and silly and
it's got Winona Ryder as.
As like the most robot. The worst. Oh,
because you gotta have an android in every one of them, regardless.
An android, and then the Predator movies.
She was
so
cute. She was so adorable.
I lost her. She lost me after Girl Interrupted. Man, was that afterwards or before it? I think that was.
I think it was around the same time.
Right around the same time, because she went from being like a really promising actor. She sort of did a Kristen Stewart, where she was really promising when she was younger, like in the late 80s. And then something happened, and oh man, she was terrible. And then she like did okay performances in like secondary things like Mr. Deeds, which she was okay in, but the movie wasn't good. But anyways, no, I mean, like the Predator movies, I liked the first two Predator movies. I thought Predators was terrible, but I thought that Alien vs. Predator kind of merged the two kind of neatly, and they had aliens fighting predators in it, which I was like, well, that's kind of why I wanted to see that.
I mean, it lit up to the billing. I guess I get your point.
Yeah. I don't know what anyone was expecting. I feel like, oh, what are you expecting? It's aliens. Have you read any of the comics? They're as dumb as this movie is.
I think that's partly it. It was just so dumb.
It's
ludicrous from start to finish. And I mean, but that's inherent in the premise.
Yeah.
I don't think they should have gone there. It was great in the comics.
It's Frankenstein meets the Wolfman 2004 is what it was.
And I love Frankenstein versus the Wolfman.
Yeah.
I loved all those Universal horror movies where they were doing the team-ups and the matchups.
And those aren't good movies, but they're fun.
They're not. No.
They're ridiculous. They're the ones when they actually, what's funny is those Universal monster movies, when they put all three of them in there, like House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, those didn't work because they could never write a story that actually took all three. In fact, the most effectively written three monster story was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, because each monster was integral to the part. But whereas, like, I think it's
we live tweeted that, didn't we?
We did,
yes,
years ago. But it was either, I think it's House of Dracula or House of Frankenstein. One of them is, it's like, I think it's House of Frankenstein. It starts off and they run into Dracula, and then Dracula dies somehow or gets hit by light or whatever, and then they meet the other two. So they never actually, not all three of them at once. It's just sort of like they have this 15 minute Dracula story, and then the rest of the movie is Frankenstein and the Wolfman. It's really bizarre. But no, I like Paul W.S. Anderson, but he's just sort of stagnating in these.
I think he needs to divorce Mila.
Yeah,
sometimes that's the only thing.
Look
what happened with what's his name, the guy who's married to Madonna.
Sherlock Guy Ritchie.
But you knew once they got together, he was going to do a movie with her, and he was going to bomb.
It was going to be awful. Yeah. Have you seen Swept Away? Is it any good?
I tried.
Is it one of those like Ishtar where you're going to get people being like, "Oh no, it really is a good movie."
No, nobody saw it. It's not.
No,
she's atrocious in it. The premise, I mean, it was basically a remake of a movie that was made in mid-70s, and it was very much a movie of that time, of that time period, and the politics of it, and what it was trying to say, and updating it into the, you know, whatever, a decade ago just made no sense. And having her just running around.
Well, she's not a good actor.
No, and trying to be sexy. It was just so horrible. It was really like watching a car accident. And I watched it for about half an hour, and I just said, you know what? I just can't take this. Out of
Madonna,
out of my affection for Madonna, I don't want to see her in so much pain.
Madonna is, I mean, I'm using the term loosely. She's that artist who had her time, and her artistic career, and like I said, I'm using that loosely, is sort of like a celebrity's. A female celebrity's attractiveness. It had a period of time in their 20s and 30s where they were attractive, but then she just kept trying to do more to it and reinvent it. That's like getting plastic surgery, that she kind of became irrelevant and grotesque and ugly. And now she's kind of a joke.
Right. You can't grace. Yeah. You can't age gracefully.
Yeah.
With that.
I mean,
when she did the Super Bowl thing, right? Oh my God. She could, you know, I was trying to give her a little credit for the, you know, maybe she couldn't move around on the shoes, but she's done that before. And she looked like an old woman trying to pretend she was younger.
Yeah.
And there was a scene where she does some sort of flip over a guy's back. Mm-hmm. And I was honestly worried that she was going to hurt herself.
She blows a hip.
She's like 54. I mean, come on, you know, no matter how healthy you are, you do slow down.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like when Tom Cruise.
Heal is fast.
Like now Tom Cruise is like he in both Night and Day and in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, he had the shirtless scene, and she's like, no, just keep the shirt on because your boobs are sagging, man.
He still looked pretty good in Rock of Ages.
Because he was playing an aging rock star, and if you watch him in both Night and Day and Ghost Protocol, when he's got his shirt off, you can notice his nipples are way lower than they should be.
And so you're saying he needs a nipple tuck.
Well, it's just his skin is sagging. That's what happens when you get into your fifth.
We need to make that a Twitter meme. Yes.
Yeah.
You need nipple tuck.
Nipple sack. Well, but nipple I know. But that's the thing. I mean, it's like you just grow old. Let yourself grow old. And like I was watching, I showed my kids all the Bond movies this summer, and we were watching Die Another Day, which I find those fun. I mean, they're ridiculous, but they're like the Roger Moore movies, and. All of a sudden, Madonna shows because she did the music for it, which is a terrible song, but it's a fucking earworm and you can't get rid of it.
Well, she shows up as his fencing instructor or something. Yeah. Once. Oh my God, yes.
I was tweeting during these, but I'm like, what the fuck is Madonna doing in this movie?
And the funny thing, she's in that one scene and that's it. Right?
Yeah. And it's just like, it was so obvious that they're like, because you're Madonna, can you do the song? She's like, only if I get a speaking part in the movie. And then she did the movie We, I don't know how you say it.
Yes.
Did you see it? That was terrible.
I didn't. She directed that though.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, it's obvious that she has experience in music videos because it looked very slick. It looked good. But it was the most god-awfully boring movie ever, directed by somebody who had no goddamn idea how to direct anything. It was just like, well, make it look pretty. You know, it's like, you know, just because some people can make that transition, some people, you know, like David Fincher can do music videos and then do rail movies, you know, and other directors have done that. That doesn't mean Madonna can. So, fuck Madonna, whatever that means. But anyways,
I'd rather not.
You know, not now.
Not ever, really. But
I mean, like, give me her in her True Blue days. Yeah, man, she was, or when she was in her, you know, spunky little. I'm not Cyndi Lauper outfits from the mid 80s. Yeah, she was kind of cute back then.
She never did anything for me.
Really?
I don't know. No. Sorry.
I mean, like Truth or Dare times, she looked good. But yeah, not now. Somehow the gap between her teeth just got bigger as she got older. I don't know why.
That's weird.
But now it's like sort of like wrapping around her face. She looks like a monster from the Resident Evil movies.
Oh,
did I go too far? My apologies to all the Madonna fans out there.
Or to the Resident Evil zombies.
Or the Resident Evil. I do not look like Madonna, damn it. But anyways, I don't know. I'm going to see it, but it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. But I like the 3D. I like the fact that
I don't want to pay for the 3D. That's my issue. Yeah. Do I want to pony up even at a bargain matinee? They're still going to charge you extra for the 3D, and I just don't know if I want to do that.
Well, I will say this: Paul W.S. Anderson knows how to use 3D. I mean, he shoots his movies with the Fusion camera system. So he shoots, at least he did the last one. I don't know. I'm assuming this one he did.
Yes.
He loves the medium. He will do stuff with it, and he knows how to use it. And I can respect that. I love 3D anyways. I just don't like the ticket price hike. I'll let you in a little secret. I have, as a critic in my town, we get a pass to a local theater, and they're showing it. So I'll end up seeing it for free. 3D or not, but
nice.
Yeah, I mean, it actually, honestly, if I did have to pay, I probably would opt to see this one in 3D as opposed to one that I knew was just converted. You know.
Probably.
You know, I was impressed with the 3D work on his last film. Well, the last Resident Evil. Has he done anything since Resident Evil? Did he actually direct this one?
He did the Three Musketeers.
Oh God, remake. That was bad.
3D. I tried to watch that one and didn't get very far.
Yeah, you know, it was. Yeah, you know, that was. Yeah.
She tried. Once she showed up, I'm like, no.
She was in it.
No. And then they kind of make her like an extra musketeer. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
She's sword fighting. I'm like, no.
No, it's. Yeah, it's. I can't defend that movie. I really can't. And like I said, again, I do like the 3D, but yeah, that was a terrible film. Yeah, The Three Musketeers was terrible. Oni did Death Race. See, that's the thing. I mean, like he did the one I saw, Mortal Kombat, I thought was okay. I loved Event Horizon. Soldier was eh. I thought the original Resident Evil was okay. I liked Alien vs. Predator. And then it was like Death Race, another Resident Evil, Three Musketeers, and now this Resident Evil. So he's sort of diluting the movies I like with movies I don't like.
Well, they're so profitable. I think that they've actually bucked the trend as far as sequels go, and that they've made more money as they've progressed. So there seems to be that ancillary markets are picking up. People are watching them on DVD and streaming, and they want to go see them in a theater. I don't know why.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like the underworld movies tend to do well. But what's going to happen is you're going to see what happens. What I've noticed happens with these series. Is they do well, they do well, they do well, and then they don't.
Then they just bomb, like the Saw films.
The Saw.
Cliff, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, did better, did still pretty well, Saw, the last Saw comes out, and it just died. And all the series do that. You know, you're going to see that happen with Paranormal Activity. Probably Paranormal Activity 4 is going to do well, but maybe 5 or 6, then suddenly no one will see it. So.
As it should be, I think.
Yeah. Anyways.
They exhaust the premise, and it's time to just move on.
Yep. And with that, we will move on to the box office.
We will.
The box office was is staggeringly unimpressive last week, in which you had The Words and Cold Light of Day, both of which did not do well. At least The Words hit the top 10. The Cold Light of Day.
They didn't screen that for critics.
No
and
one.
I saw zero advertising for it.
It just
if
showed
it wasn't
up.
For hearing for it online, I would not have known that it was actually being released.
I couldn't even get a confirmation until like midweek that it was actually opening in my town.
Bizarre, considering that Henry Cavill and Bruce Willis are in it, right?
From the publicist. So yeah, it did not do well. It was not very impressive. It lost. It just barely beat out the Raiders of the Lost Ark IMAX re-release by like $150,000 for the weekend.
Wow.
The Words came in number four with $4.75 million. Here's an interesting.
That's super poor.
That's terrible. I mean, it actually, honestly, it's actually probably going to make its budget back because it only cost $6 million.
Which is, again, surprising. It actually looked good for the price.
Yeah. What's interesting is this is the worst weekend in years. It is the first time no movie has made $10 million on the 3-day spread since the weekend after Labor Day 2008. It is also the first time since I think 2003 that no movie has made more than $10 million and a Nicolas Cage movie has not been in the top 10. Just to show you, it didn't even have Nicolas Cage to blame for this. Because you had Next, because Next was what was it was like the in 2008 during this time frame, it was, I think, what was the Nicolas Cage movie? It was Bangkok Dangerous was the new movie that weekend. And then like April of 2004, you also had this 4-day, no movie making $10 million, but Next was somewhere in the mix. And The Wicker Man was in like you got to go back to like 2003 or 2004 until you find a movie that had this poor box office without a Nicolas Cage movie.
He's made quite a few duds.
He's made a lot of duds.
Which is remarkable because usually that means you'll stop getting work.
He still gets it because he's a vampire.
He's always available. And isn't his stuff already going straight to DVD and straight to VOD?
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is if you take out the first number one movie this weekend was The Possession with $9.3 million, and then Lawless with $6 million, which actually was a decent hold for it, even though I hated the movie.
I was vaguely indifferent to it.
But the next in the top 10 was a less than $2 million spread. The Expendables 2 had $4.95 million, and then at number 10 was The Dark Knight Rises with $3.2 million. So less than $2 million separated ranks 3 through 10, which just shows nothing made much money. You know, you have the 2016 Obama's America is still sort of pittering along, even though it's dropping because everybody who wants to see it has seen it.
Correct.
And it'll probably top off 30-ish million, which is good for a political documentary. You know, hey, you know. So, but yeah, this last weekend was terrible, and it didn't help that The Words was not a good movie. I mean, The Words.
Well, aside from the quality of the film, I was sort of surprised it did so poorly, just because of the cast.
Well,
but I guess they just don't draw anybody.
I don't think Dennis Quaid's a draw. I don't think Jeremy Irons a draw.
And Bradley Cooper, I thought, is the one I was thinking of. That Bradley Cooper would at least help to push it close to 10 mil.
Yeah, because Zaldana isn't. I mean, she kind of disappeared. She had a huge after, like Star Trek and Avatar. She was like boom, boom, boom. She was in everything, and then she was kind of absent after Columbiana, which was I think last year. And then
I think that was her bid to be, you know, female action star, and it didn't do particularly well.
Yeah, so. It was like I think it was either a January or September movie. So it wasn't a big thing, but she hadn't been in anything recently. And you're right, Bradley Cooper, this was kind of an interesting thing to see what he would do. But see, all the movies he's been in have kind of had a certain level of high profile, and then he did Limitless. But part of the thing with Limitless is Limitless could connect to an audience. It was a movie that it had something going on. The Words was just this weepy, drippy, pulley. I also look at The Words as kind of like a alternate version of Limitless.
<'Cause>, oh, really?
Okay. Well, because he plays a writer who's struggling with a novel.
That is true. That is true.
And
I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, The Words is what ends up happening when he doesn't find the pills. So, I think it's also, here's the other thing I think the problem with The Words is, it was a movie within a movie within a movie.
Yeah, that was one movie too many.
Yeah. And if anything proved, with Inception, which is not that hard to understand, thank you very much, that people get confused with that kind of stuff. Because there are people going, I can't understand Inception. Where are they? How many levels of the movies? Dreams are there?
Because it's only been repeated 5 or 6 times by different characters. You know,
and they don't simultaneously shift back between each one and show the van dropping off the... I mean, you know what's going on.
Right.
But people...
And he distinguishes by location, by... by cinematography,
yeah. color palette, everything.
Color palette, right, right.
And
it does make it easy.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, but so many people had trouble with that, and I think they were able to look past it because it was a fun action-y kind of movie.
Yes.
But not the words. So,
so what you're saying is the words actually needed to be an action film.
No, I think the words just needed to not be made. It was a shitty movie. And it's a weird installment. I think CBS Films is just grasping at straws, just desperately trying to find something that's going to work. And nothing has. I think, did they do The Women in Black?
No. That was the Hammer Films.
It was Hammer, but I think somehow, The Woman in Black was co-distributed by CBS
Films. But that was distributed, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they didn't have anything to do actually with the production.
Well, but it counts.
Selection of the press.
I think it counts. Don't you?
I tend not to count those. Oh. Because if they're just coming in for distribution, they're just taking a cut of the pie to handle that part.
Yeah, I don't know. I think at least they got their name tied to it. It's like same thing with Salmon Fishing in Yemen. I mean, they got that one. But yeah, this is aside from those two, their filmography is Extraordinary Measures, Faster, Beastly, The Mechanic, and The Backup Plan.
Wow.
And I liked The Mechanic, and I thought Faster was okay. But the rest of it is not good. So
I say there's nothing memorable in any of those films, really.
Yeah. You know what's sad?
Faster actually had, I thought, was a little bit more interesting movie just because of the sort of almost dual protagonists and the way they were kind of playing off the character, the driver with no name and the Western symbolism and all that.
If you take The Woman in Black out of the picture, since you don't want to count it, you know what's the top grossing? The Backup Plan with $34.5 million. $37.5 million, excuse me. That's depressing.
Is that the Jennifer Lopez?
Yes.
Comedy, okay. I really shouldn't have called it a comedy, non-comedy.
It was so awful.
Yes, I saw that. Terrible. I saw it. I reviewed it.
Yeah. Anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
Resident Evil 5.
I think Resident Evil is good for
one big opening weekend.
Well, but even then, it doesn't need anything huge because the other movies haven't done. They're not enormous money makers. They really aren't. I mean, all of them make around 50 or 60 million.
Well, that's U.S.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I think they actually make more, close to three times more.
Oh, yeah. Well, foreign for the last Resident Evil movie was 230. It almost made 300 million worldwide.
Yes.
And that's a lot of it. Well, you're also getting that as the explosion of foreign 3D. Because the last one was 50 million domestic and 90, like just under 100 million foreign for Resident Evil Extinction. And then was a Resident Evil Apocalypse was before that, and that did a 51 and a 78. So really, it was the last one that did extremely well, and that's because you have the explosion of 4 and 3D.
Right.
Yeah. Even the first Resident Evil made 60-40, or 40-60-40 in the U.S. And the only time you have the huge difference is the last Resident Evil, which was huge overseas.
Right.
So.
Well, it had this great opening sequence, and then it died, basically. Yeah. It had an opening sequence that really should have been the closing sequence.
Yeah. Well, but see, a lot of them, it's sort of like the Ice Age movies. And I said this about the last Ice Age movie that came out, which wasn't terrible, but it wasn't.
Oh, it was painful. It was painful.
It wasn't
please.
Great by any. It wasn't even good. It was just, eh.
I would say it was so far below.
Yeah.
I mean, Pirates.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, how creatively bankrupt can you get when when your gimmick for the fourth film is Pirates
with Peter Dinklage.
Yes, I honestly, that was one of those where I kind of did the same thing. I kept away from any of the press, any of the trailers, just saw a little bit of the teasers. So I went in fairly blind, and all of a sudden to see that was the gimmick.
Did you stand up and go, Pirates, God damn it?
I would stomp out, no.
Well, you know,
I honestly wanted to.
What's funny is when I watched it, I saw it with my son.
It was no Madagascar 3, 4.
Well, Madagascar 3 was cute. Yeah.
It was pretty solid. I was surprised. Yeah.
But I saw the Ice Age movie. Well, the dinosaur one was the best of the sequels, but the first one was the best because everyone had a reason to be in the movie. Now, whenever you get these like animated sequels, they're just like trying, they have all these characters and they're like, well, they were in the other movie, so we got to find something for them to do. Because that's Madagascar suffered from that with Melman the giraffe and Gloria the hippo. They had nothing to do with these. So they kind of made this stupid side story that made no sense. But when I was watching Ice Age, what's this last one? Continental Drift. When I was watching that, I realized, and this is why it does so well overseas, I'm like, you don't have to understand the dialogue. You actually don't have to listen.
Absolutely.
You can kind of see by just looking at what people are doing, you can get the gist of the movie. And the last Resident Evil was very much like that. You didn't need to. There was no heavy nuance to the plot, and it wasn't dialogue. It may have had dialogue, but it wasn't. But it wasn't dialogue critical.
Correct.
You know, you could get by the emotion and the tone and what happened, and those that translates well. You see, actually, you're starting to see more of that nowadays in these big movies that go. Even the Avengers. As much as I love the Avengers, you don't need to know what's going on. You don't. I mean, to get the to enjoy the Avengers, you don't have to speak a lick of English, and you can guess, you can figure out what's going on. You're like, oh, they need that shiny object. Oh, that guy stole it. Oh, okay, now there's the superheroes we've all seen before. Now they're fighting. Now they're friends. He turned into the Hulk. I mean, that's
and it's cool.
It's awesome, cool. Hulk smash. But yeah.
Oh my God.
You're going to see that more and more, that you don't need to actually understand what's going on to enjoy the movie.
Ice Age Continental Drift made four times as much, more than four times. Yeah.
Same thing with the last one.
Three times, I'm sorry.
The Ice Age movies and like Roland Emmerich films, they like do okay in the U.S., ridiculously well overseas.
Yeah, 2012 really just blew the doors off.
2012, I think, was
just shocking.
Isn't like 800 million worldwide, and it made like 120 in the U.S.
It's
insane how the spread is. So all those people are like, oh, foreign people understand film much better and love artistic. No, they don't. They love shit as much as we do, possibly more.
Sadly, yes.
Anyways, shall we? Is there anything else you want to get off your chest? Anything you want to talk about? You'd seen the Master. Did you want to talk real briefly about that?
It's a movie that's almost impossible to talk about briefly.
Okay,
but I could just tell you that I did indeed love it, and I'm not always the biggest P.T.A. Anderson fan. I actually really hated Magnolia with a passion. That was one of my least favorite films of that year, of that decade, of his. And I know it has his staunch defenders, but I thought he was just trying to do the Altman light thing. You know, he sort of wears his cinematic influences a little too heavily sometimes. You know, whether it's Kubrick or Altman.
Does a little bit in Magnolia, just a sconch of.
Just a little bit. And it was just so over obvious and overwrought, and the dialogue it lacked so much subtlety. I ended up really hating it. Yeah. And then There Will Be Blood sort of brought me back.
I was halfway with There Will Be Blood.
I thought there were a few missteps that just knocked it down a notch, but The Master, no missteps.
Okay.
I can honestly say there's nothing in the film, thinking about it from beginning to end, I'm not a filmmaker, but that seemed that jump out at me as flaws or mistakes that he might have made in the tone or the story or the characters.
Yeah.
It really feels like he has just hit a creative peak. See, all the things that he didn't do right or that he just sort of missed out on earlier, and he's really found his voice, and it's really impressive. And the performance is Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know what he's doing to himself, but the sort of self-torture that he puts himself through for the performance is mind-boggling and almost difficult to watch at times.
See, what's interesting with P.T. Anderson for myself is there's only really one of his movies that I bona fide love, and that is
Boogie Nights,
and it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow,
right up there. It's in my like top five, probably. Love, love, love Boogie Nights. Everything else I've seen of his has ranged from kind of disappointing to just okay. Like Sydney was okay, or Hard Eight. Magnolia, I was just kind of indifferent on. I didn't think it was fantastic. I thought it was okay. Punch Drunk Love, same thing. And There Will Be Blood. I mean, I there was some incredible elements to it, but other parts that I thought played extremely soft. And so I'm very curious about The Master because, I kind of want to really like his movies, but like I said, he really hasn't wowed me since Boogie Nights, and that's it.
Well, this is almost the anti-Boogie Nights in the sense that Boogie Nights is still very traditional, conventional storytelling. Uh-huh. Very straightforward, very, very easy to understand, the characters' motivations, what the stories are, subplots. The Master is not that.
Yeah.
The Master is sort of him sort of veering more into, you know, I mean, he's already shown this Kubrick influence, but more the stripping the story away, allowing a lot more what I call interpretive ambiguity.
Okay.
So where things take place or how they relate to each other doesn't necessarily spell things out. And one of the things I really love about The Master is that he doesn't go for simple answers as to why people do things.
Now,
they're a lot more complex and more contradictory, and I think a lot of people are going to be sort of put off by that.
So,
because you're not going to get those simple answers.
So to quote Rudy Obias, who friend of the show, if you were to say The Master is either masterpiece or masturbatory, which one is it?
He said that. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm on The Masterpiece.
You're on The Masterpiece? Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's a divisive movie. I mean, I know a lot of people are, you know, polarized on it.
And I think a lot of that is sort of that obliqueness and the ambiguity that he's... And it's just not there at the end. It's not like Inception, where you have an ambiguous ending. It's actually throughout
the film. Inception ending. I hate that.
Right. Well, I did too, and especially since, you know, he wakes up in a dream, it's going to end up in a dream, he's going to leave it up to the audience, and it's almost Nolan saying, hey, everyone, I'm going to leave you with something to talk about at the end.
It was Nolan going, tee-hee-hee, this is so original. I'm like, no, it's not. It was done in, like, EC Horror Comics in the 50s, and then Twilight Zone episodes in the 60s, and then shitty television movies in the 80s, and then again...
Fiction has probably had it, you know, 100 years before that. You know?
Which one?
I'm just saying general fiction.
Oh, yeah. Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
I mean, don't sit there and go, people are going to talk about it. Fuck you, Nolan. You are not as good as you think you are, and you're not as good as your fans think you are. So there.
Damn. Okay. All right.
Well, that's okay. I went on a tirade against Jessica Chastain and Viola Davis last week, so I'll step aside from that. I'm interested to see The Master. I'm interested in the other one.
And he's not making a mainstream film. I mean, one of my problems with Nolan is sort of that propensity to always over-explain everything. And part of that is he's getting a $200 million budget from Warner Brothers. Mm. So they want to make it as clear, crystal clear as possible to the audience. So that's why you have these really long explanatory scenes. And that killed me in Inception. Like, you spent the first hour explaining the premise, and the premise is really not that complicated.
Again, the premise is nothing new.
No.
I mean, it's Freddy Krueger. You
have characters just standing around. That's all they are, exposition magnets, you know? Well, Ellen Page. That was her entire role was just...
Now, wait, what does this do?
Walking with him and listening to him.
It's sort of like watching 3-2-1 Contact when we were kids, that PBS show, where the teenager would go to, like, the factory of their day touring, like, a paper factory and be like, now, what is this paper used for? It's like, what are you, like, 17 years old? You don't know what paper's used for? What the hell's your problem? The other thing, like with Nolan in his movies, is he does think he's doing high art, but he's doing these mainstream movies, and he'll put stuff in there. You're just like, oh, geez, no, that's just like the ticking. They literally have twice, literally have a ticking clock in The Dark Knight Rises, and then when Gordon's like trying to get on into the. To block the signal, and he drops it. He drops the little box while he's on the truck, and he drops it and falls into like the hitch. And I'm like, really?
Right.
That's like in every movie. That's not original. So,
well, to me, also he survives the truck going off, and the Marion Cotillard's character doesn't.
Like, yeah.
Wait, how does he emerge unscathed? You know, and she's completely crushed.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's the cab, I know, but he's still going to get tossed around. There are a lot of, you know, heavy
Because he's
machinery.
Jim fucking Gordon. That's right. So.
Yes, yeah.
I'm curious to see. I'm cautiously curious to see The Master. I get a little nervous after There Will Be Blood because I think P.T. Anderson, as opposed to Paul W.S. Anderson, but I think P.T. Anderson tends to masturbate quite a bit when he makes his movies.
Well, he is definitely aiming for high art. Mm-hmm. I'll say that much. And he's not as interested in mainstream appeal.
Yeah.
And there's something to that, you know, that he's ambitious. He's trying for something that other filmmakers don't even have the talent to try. So.
Here's the question I had, and I posed this on Twitter. I posed this on Twitter. Is this going to be the movie that
the movie to beat for the Oscars?
Well, is this the one that Harvey Weinstein's going to come out and tell everybody is the greatest movie of the year? Because he's done that the last 2 years, and it's paid off for him. Because he did it with the King's Speech, where suddenly, like, nobody was seeing the King's Speech except for these small groups of junket people, and then early screenings, and it's just like. Weinstein's like, this is the greatest movie. That people are like, yes, 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 it is the greatest movie. And they talk about it and talk about it. Wins the Academy Award. 3 months later, people are going to the King's Speech and like, yeah, it was okay. And the same thing with The Artist. He's like, this is the greatest movie ever. And I saw The Artist and I'm like, yeah, it was okay. I mean, it was a good movie. It was charming. And
except those two films were really quite mainstream.
The Artist isn't. No, people walked out of that movie.
Really? Okay. I can't imagine because they're really straightforward narratives in the sense that they're easy to understand.
They're straightforward. The characters
are, what they're doing. The Master is not that film. And I think, I'm not sure if the Weinstein Company is going to do that. I don't know what other things they have on their slate.
Well, they got Django.
Which is not going to be an Oscar bait movie.
No, but that's the thing is do they have something held back that they're going to be like, because I mean what I've always seen happens is the last couple of years is the Weinsteins have picked the movie they're going to push and they were most successful this past year because they said this movie's going to win the best picture, The Artist, and one best actor. Meryl Streep's going to win Best Actress. You know what I mean? And they really pushed hard for Michelle Williams. And they really only cared about Best Supporting Actress for My Week with Meryl. They didn't care about anything else, although, I mean, they technically did. But that's what they're like, this is what's going to win. And they were very successful. In the Weinsteins, the last 2 years, have picked up a lot of the stuff. I don't know if they have anything. Whereas, like, they had we talked about We that they had, and they didn't. They pushed it. They were just going for the costume design and the song.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nothing else they took seriously.
Right. Well, their whole business seems to be based around Oscars and getting Oscar nominated. It'll get nominated. It'll get multiple nominations. I see music score and art direction and cinematography. The cinematography is absolutely stunning at times. The cinematography, yeah, and just the choreography and the compositions also fantastic.
I think
it'll get nominations for actor, supporting actress for Amy Adams. I wouldn't be surprised if all three of them win.
They're just really, it's just really early. Even September, it's really early to be pushing award films. That's the thing. I mean, it's getting rolled out, but usually stuff in September and August and September, it really has to be kind of a phenomenon. Like The Help has to be a phenomenon for people to remember that. And the one I think,
well, the critics groups will remember The Master.
Yeah, well, no,
that'll be enough of a push, I think.
But I mean to like win big, because honestly, I don't think Harvey Weinstein gives a shit about like the Kansas City Film Commission or Kansas City Film Critics Circle or whatever, you know.
Well, no, I think it's going to hit. Well, it's just a question of attention and how much attention it's going to get because of the various critics groups. And there's plenty of films that I haven't seen that are.
Well, they haven't even released.
Next few months, that's always hard to tell.
There's a bunch of stuff that's going to come out in December that nobody's going to see until January, except for.
I mean, you know, Lincoln is going to get a bunch of nominations just by default.
Yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis is. But then against Daniel Day-Lewis is the fact that he's already won twice.
Yeah. Well, and
Phoenix hasn't. And Joaquin Phoenix's performance is just so out there. It's just so raw. Mm-hmm. And again, it's so difficult to watch. And that might be held against him.
He won for Walk the Line, didn't he?
No. He was nominated. Oh, no. Okay. That was a Reese Witherspoon one.
Oh, Reese Witherspoon. Well, I think the movie that Harvey Weinstein's going to latch onto and push hard is Bully. That's what I think he's going to push hard for. And it's likely going to win Best Documentary. I think it has a good shot. Just because he's going to push it. And nothing else is going to really be his movie. And, I mean, they're not going to nominate, like, Katy Perry, Part of Me, for Best Documentary.
Right.
or 2016 Obama's America. These are not movies that are going to get nominations in the Oscars. So, anyways, let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. And this is in honor of Finding Nemo. And this is five great fish movies.
What do you mean? It's not in honor of me being on the show?
That's right, because it is. Your Twitter handle is Fyodorfish, as we all have discovered earlier. the first one, and these are in no particular order, and this is not at all a scientific list, but Jaws. Jaws is a great fish movie because, of course, Jaws is a fish, a giant shark that eats people. Yum, yum, yum. Delicioso.
So do I get a shot at a five?
What? Well, no, you had a couple that you wanted to mention in relation to Jaws. You said,
oh, right. Well, just other fish movies. So I just didn't know at what point I should.
Well, you had said you wanted to give some love to Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, which is fun. It's very derivative.
You know,
brainy, of Jaws.
Brainiac sharks, you know, genetically engineered smart sharks. Nothing's gonna go wrong there. Nope, no siree.
The best
dumbest scientist ever.
The best exit scene for Samuel L. Jackson ever made.
Absolutely. And for several other characters, too.
Yeah.
There were a few surprises there.
Well, you know what's funny about Deep Blue Sea? Again, for some reason, I'm mentioning commentaries a lot. If you listen to the commentary of that movie, and I think they do individual interviews and they edit them together, and you've got Samuel L. Jackson talking about this, talking about that, and then when his scene, he's like, oh, there it goes. Oh, and there, and I'm done, and I'm out of here, and he just disappears for the rest of the game. He doesn't mention anything else. It's kind of like he's like, well, my part's over. Fuck you all, motherfuckers.
I have fulfilled my contractual obligations. Yeah. Yes.
And you also wanted to give a little shout out to Tentacles, didn't you?
Oh, Tentacles, of course. Yeah, John Huston. Well, there was that whole flurry of Jaws ripoffs, of course, and Piranha being one of them. I know you put Piranha 3D on the list.
Oh, now you busted out my list.
Oh, I'm sorry.
See?
I jumped ahead.
Yeah, spoilers.
Spoilers. But Tentacles was one of those early films. It came out 2 years later. Giant octopus,
yeah.
And it faces off against a orca whale at the end.
Ah, well, you said this was an Italian movie, correct?
Yeah, an Italian ripoff, and John Huston shows up for a few scenes, gets top billing. Mm. He did a few of those.
Well,
in Italy, you know, for the cash, I guess.
The Italians did a lot of movies back then. One of them they did that was a Jaws ripoff was called. Well, it was multiple names. It was, you can find it on Amazon. It's called The Last Shark, but it was released or attempted to release in the U.S. as Great White. And it came out in the 80s. It was 80s. So it was several years. I mean, it was significantly several years after Jaws, even after Jaws 2. And which, by the way, Jaws 2 is not that good. People remember that more fondly than it really is. It's kind of a shitty movie. It's a fucking helicopter, for Christ's sake. The Last Shark, or a.k.a. Great White, was being released. And I remember seeing trailers for or ads for it on television. And they released it in American theaters. And Universal sued and blocked it because of how similar it was to Jaws, being a shark that was attacking. I mean, it was a great white shark attacking beaches.
A beachside community. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Italians, like you said, the Italians did it all the time. They did it with Star Wars, Star Crash, which was a horrible film. They did it with Alien as well. I think there were a bunch of Alien ripoffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Dawn of the Dead, Zombie, which was released in the. In Europe as Dawn of the Dead 2.
Yeah, exactly.
As if it was actually a sequel when it was not.
It's
a sequel.
Nothing
at all.
To do.
Yes. Yeah.
But The Last Shark is actually mildly interesting. It has Vic Morrow in it. Who was was in the movie The Twilight Zone and was killed on set. Famously killed on set. But that was an interesting. It's actually an interesting movie to check out. So the next one on the list is Big Fish, which is one of Tim Burton's, although it's an adaptation, it's one of his not typical adaptations. And it's about a guy's journey through a life. I loved Big Fish. I thought it was a brilliantly done movie. And it's very different from, it is not a typical Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, I suppose that's a plus, yes.
I mean, it's
considering.
But it doesn't have Johnny Depp in it, and it doesn't have the standard design. I mean, it doesn't look like. It's probably his least typical movie that you see, but it's very surreal at times. I really enjoyed Big Fish. The next one was Piranha 3D. Had to throw that in the list, even though you knew that was coming, simply because it was fun. And It's gory. It's not Piranha 3 Double D, because that thing was absolute dog shit.
I didn't see it, so I can't comment on it.
So
but
bad.
That bad, really.
It is. Oh, it's really bad. It's not even like live tweet good. It is just...
I was tempted, but everything I've heard...
It's one of those, it makes...
From reputable sources, says nope.
It's poorly done. It's like got a cast that shouldn't be... It shouldn't have that big of a cast. But you also wanted to mention the original Piranha.
Yes, Joe Dante directed it.
That's right, Joe Dante.
That's sort of his initial claim to fame, and it was for Roger Corman, I believe.
Yep.
Got his start.
And it stars, I believe, what's her name? She was in The Howling. Excuse me. Oh, my God. Drank too much. Got to lay off the cough syrup. But she was, I forget the girl's name who was in
Dee Wallace? No, not Dee Wallace.
No. The other woman. She was in The Howling. She was in, hold on, I'm looking it up right now because that is how she's prepared I am. I just ran across her, too, she's a character actor. She was in a lot of Joe Dante movies. Piranha was 1978. I was wrong. I thought it was 1980. This one stars. Let's see.
Oh, Barbara Steele. No.
Oh, Heather Menzies. I think is her name.
I know who you're thinking of. Belinda Blasky.
Yes, Belinda Blasky. Yes. She's in. I always had a thing for her.
Did you really?
Yeah. But she wasn't.
She's the assistant in The Howling who doesn't quite make it to the end.
Yes. I was getting her mixed up with Heather Menzies, but yeah, Belinda Blasky. I was a huge fan of hers. I always thought she was very cute. Oh no, she is in this. Belinda Blasky is in this. Okay. Anyways, for those who don't know who she is, she's in it, and I had a thing for her. Enough of that. Okay, the next one is Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is technically not quite a fish. It's sort of a fish-human hybrid-ish thing. Gillman. Classic, but I take him as a fish kind of creature. This was a classic one, you know, just kind of in there for fun. And it's not a great movie, but it's still fun, especially if you can catch it in like a 3D projection with the anaglyph lenses. And then the final one on the list is The Little Mermaid, which is a great Disney movie. It was the first in the resurgence of the Disney where it did Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, and that sort of like four movie run, Les Poissons. So there's that. And then you had one for the honorable mention.
Oh, I probably had several, but
You had Orca. You had mentioned Orca.
Yeah, Orca the Killer Whale, which is another Jaws ripoff with Richard Harris.
Yeah, which I pointed out to you is not a fish. It's a mammal.
And the Creature from the Black Lagoon is a fish.
It's more of fish than a whale is.
They swim in the sea. They eat seafood.
That doesn't make them a fish. So does a sea lion.
I'm going really broad here. It's a very general description. Okay, well, Moby Dick. Moby Dick's another fish story.
No.
I mean,
no,
Jaws is basically a mini Moby Dick.
Jaws is an allegory for Moby Dick, but Jaws is in fact a fish, whereas Moby Dick is a whale. It's a sperm whale. So.
All right. Okay.
See?
As long as we don't mention Shark Tale. Sorry.
Don't mention Shark Tale because that's a shit movie. That is terrible. That is actually the movie that made me start to hate Will Smith.
It made me hate DreamWorks Animation, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, and it took him a long time to prove himself to me after that.
It took him like to Kung Fu Panda. And I'm like, okay, that one's good.
Finally, yes. I agree.
All right. I think with that, we probably should go to a break.
Okay.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. If you missed us and you're on the radio out in Wyoming, you can go check us online and go to fatguysinthemovies.com, or you can go to iTunes and download the show and listen to the middle segment. We actually don't get too crazy and dirty in that one, which is odd. We usually we go completely off the rails and say a lot of stuff you shouldn't hear on the radio, but not too much. We actually had an interesting discussion. We talked a little bit about The Master. We talked a little bit about Resident Evil and that whole series, actually, and Paul W.S. Anderson as a director and Paul P.T. Anderson as directors. And we talked about box office and the just dismal box office from last week. But now we got, do you know, I didn't prep you for this, but you've been on the show enough to know You know what's coming. You know what's coming up next, don't you?
I have a vague recollection.
Yes. Would it be the world famous DVD roundup?
I think so. Maybe.
That's what you got to say.
Would it be? I don't know. Would it be the world famous DVD roundup?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that shows how prepared we were. Trust me, we're professionals. Anyways, yes, we got the DVD roundup. Now, there's a bunch of stuff. Now, a lot of times at this time of year, you get a lot of TV series on DVD. And there's a bunch of them. You've got stuff like The Big Bang Theory Season 5, which are you a fan? Do you like The Big Bang Theory?
No, I'm a Community guy all the way through.
You can like both. I like Community. These are not mutually exclusive things.
To me, they are.
Really?
Really, yeah. Big Bang Theory has always just felt like just incredibly pandering, condescending toward geeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't stand it.
Man, you got a chip on your shoulder.
I can't stand it. I like my humor. I'm being a snob, I know.
You are.
A little bit more sophisticated and also without the condescension.
Oh, you had both Tree of Life and Melancholy in your top 10 list last year. You can be a snob.
Yeah. Okay. I did. You're right.
I did. I know. I'm like, oh, man, Mel.
Snob.
Yet you like Project X. Anyways. But yeah, The Big Bang Theory Season 5 is out on DVD and Blu-ray. Private Practice Season 5, which is the horrible Shonda Rhimes show, that's out on DVD. Castle Season 4. Castle's a good show. That's fun.
It's a decent show. It really
it's cute.
Leans really hard on the charisma of the leads and their chemistry. But and I often feel like it's underwritten. Like, wow, you could do so much more with these characters and the premise.
Well, it's a procedural. That's all it is.
Well, but even the procedural aspects just seem so bland most of the time. I just wish they put a little bit more effort into that. But hey, Nathan Fillion does well. It's good to see him working.
The only problem with this season was it gets a little bit of a you know what gets real kind of thing.
Yes.
With Beckett's character, where she's like searching for she's dealing with the trauma. I just hate that stuff. I'm just tell the procedural and don't. When an actor or an actress wants more meat to their role is usually when it gets bad.
Although some of them are built in, like The Mentalist. I really have always hated the Red John stuff, and it always comes back, you know. And I thought a couple of the season before last that they had resolved it finally. It's like okay, let's just move on. Let's move on to the characters.
No, they always have to have that because people love that. That's why The Mentalist. That's why he's one of the highest paid actors on television.
He's got to have the traumatic past, the tragic past that propels him into becoming.
You can't resolve that stuff, you know. So and that's where it overly perpetuates. There's also Terra Nova, the complete series, because it costs too much to do a season 2. But there's some TV or there's some movie stuff. There's Titanic 3D, first time on Blu-ray, first time on 3D Blu-ray. If you really want to watch that again.
No.
There's Snow White and the Huntsman, which if you really want to watch that again, you can. I recommend not to. That's a boring movie. And it's funny, I was tweeting about it when I was watching it this week, and I go, are we sure Peter Jackson didn't direct this? Because this is just going on forever.
Ouch. And aren't you excited about 3 Hobbit movies? I'm not. I'm completely not excited at all.
I would love to see... It won't happen because it's that 3D thing right now that's connecting overseas, and that I would like to see the first Hobbit movie people go and have it not do really well, or have it like do middling, not do like I think they're expecting it to be this $300 million movie, but I think the fact that people know that not only is it not going to end in the next one, but you got to wait for another one. I'd love to see that kill the box office a little bit. Because I think this business of splitting up movies unnecessarily is stupid.
Well, at least with the Lord of the Rings movies, they were actually split up into 3 books.
Yeah,
it was one story, one continuous story. I know the whole
history. I don't have a problem with Lord of the Rings. I have a problem with taking movies like Twilight, Breaking Dawn, and making 2 movies where there's no reason to make 2 movies aside from we want more money.
Right. Well, and Harry Potter. Seven.
Yeah, Harry Potter. There's a lot to that book. I didn't feel. I mean, the first one was a little rushed. Anyway, we've only got about a minute left.
Oh, okay, sorry.
there's also that's a whole other discussion. Lola Versus is also out on DVD and Blu-ray. And Killer Clowns from Outer Space, first time on Blu-ray.
Awesome.
That's a great movie. The stinker of the week is What to Expect When You're Expecting, which is terrible, terrible, terrible movie. What do you expect? It's got Jennifer Lopez in it.
Ouch. Yes. She had potential once, and that she squandered it.
Yeah, way, way, way back. I'm hoping that this ends these sort of like self-help books
Turned into movies, yes.
Yeah. Review wrap up. Finding Nemo 3D. Mel said it was fantastic. You said it totally rocked.
Yes.
There was Resident Evil Retribution, which neither of us saw, and so it gets a preemptive suck. And you said The Master was really good too. So you
fantastic. Yes.
Go see it, especially if you don't want anything sort of linear, mainstream narrative type movies. Next week we've got Dread, End of Watch, House on the End of the Street, and The Trouble with the Curve. Mel, you got about 10 seconds. Tell everybody where to find you again, and we'll sign off.
Okay, great. E-Film Critic, nextprojection.com, SF Station, Very Aware, and that's it for me.
Right, cool. Thank you again, and everybody else, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Oh Snap with Kevin and Meryl. Celluloid Spotlight with Meryl and Hash, plus many more. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.